Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Georgiana.
Today, we are going to be talking about comparison. I think about it as bringing compassion to comparison. And before we do that, we are going to start with a body-based self-connection practice to connect with ourselves before we connect with each other and this podcast.
Mm-hmm. So, let's wiggle.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Yeah. Isn't there a song like that?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's many songs like that.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle. That's the song.
So, wiggle for the purpose of having fun and bringing some play into the moment, but wiggle also for the purpose of feeling your body and feeling it connected to some surface that you're sitting on, standing on, laying on. And then we're going to go do a little bit of a scavenger hunt with our eyes. And the game is to find a circle. And if you would like a more challenging game, look for a circle that you typically don't pay attention to.
Ooh. Secret circle, where are you?
Yes. And when you find that circle, we're just going to be with that circle, meaning just can you feel your butt on the chair, your feet on the ground, and can you just look at the circle for the next breath that you take? And then we're going to look for a bigger circle. Again, you can look for ones that you typically don't pay attention to if you want to bring some challenge to it. Oh, I found a new one. And then we're also going to repeat the same thing. Bring your awareness with your gaze and bring your awareness to your body at the same time. And now we're going to go smaller, a smaller circle, smaller than the last one. I'm finding new circles. I like this game. And being with this circle. Let's do that one more time. Let's look for something bigger. Circle that's bigger. I'm really challenging myself because I do this game all the time, but I always like to see that I'm pleasantly surprised that I can always find the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting yourself be here for a moment, looking at the circle, feeling your body. And then we'll look for a smaller one, maybe like the teeniest tiny one that you could find that's new to you.
Ooh. I had the teeniest, but there's even teenier.
And like, there must be a teenier one. I just want to find the teeniest one. Oh, I found one. Yeah. And just being there, feeling your body, looking at the circle, and then just coming back and sitting in a way or standing or being in whatever way posture feels good for you. And notice what it was like to play that game.
I like finding new shapes in my space. And I too am always pleasantly surprised that there are so many more. And then it brings my attention more microscopic, which for me can be important because I tend to go universal. And I noticed for the first time this pen that I have, which has a little crown. I got this in England right when the Queen died.
Very cute.
There's little diamondy things on it that I never even noticed. And looking for
neat?
A smaller circle helped me notice them. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's neat because we've done this practice before, but you can tweak it, right? You can tweak it, and tweaking it just means giving yourself an opportunity to build other muscles, right, grow other muscles, which is like, can I grow the muscle to find something that I don't typically look at? And then can I grow the muscle to like look a, like even more closely to find the smallest one, or look even more closely to find the biggest one? And this ties into our topic today of like comparison, like bigger and smaller, they're different. Neither one is good or bad, just different, right? And I don't think we put much judgment into those circles and what size they were. They were just different. They function for different reasons, right? They function in different ways. They serve different purposes, just different. No judgments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you wanted to tie in seasons of life comparison. This example you're giving makes me think of trees. And there's some meme or famous saying that to compare myself to others, I'm not good at remembering who quotes come from or the sources of information, but it's from somewhere beautiful. Talking about leaves that they don't, or trees that don't shame each other for losing their leaves or for changing colors, or, you know, trees are not looking at each other going, oh gosh, that one lost its leaves, I better hustle, you know?
I better hustle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or that one's budding new leaves. What's wrong with me?
But they do have an underground network of information and resource sharing that allows them to produce fruit at different rates to make sure that everyone stays alive. So if one, I'm going to not get this accurately, but the basic idea is that if one tree gets sick, they're going to give energy to another tree in their system. If one tree is fruiting, others might not. It's a network, not of comparison, but of compassionate sharing and assuring the continuation of the species.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of when we facilitated group work in person, but, you know, same thing happens online. Of noticing that different people at different times are at different places in their lives. I guess maybe we're talking about seasons again. Some people are like on an upswing in their life. And then inevitably there'll be people in the group on a lower, you know, downswing. Things are harder. Things are darker. There's less maybe to feel excited about. And it was never about judging or shaming, or there's no place to celebrate if someone else is in a lower season of life, lower sort of to them. It was like, we're all here for each other. We're all here to support. We're all here to celebrate. We're all here to encourage. And so that the trees reminded me of that. You know, we weren't in the room comparing, like, how many out of 25 are doing well today and doing well in your life, and let's have shiny stars for that. And then there's three who are not, you know. It was, we will share whatever love and capacity we have around. I remember specific nights where we told specific people, please do not support anyone today. Today your practice is allow yourself to be supported.
Yeah.
Right. So many of us, even when we feel depleted or low, feel that we are only deserving of a spot, of a space in the group if we have something to give. And sometimes it's not your season to give.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it's your season to receive. And I had to really learn that. I was only in a season of giving in my life. I didn't know there were alternatives.
Yes. That was one of my favorite practices beginning to do this work, was the season of learning to receive. And that really helped me discern between my old overgiving and giving from a genuine place that I had not previously had access to. Should giving instead of giving. Yeah.
I'm writing this down because I want to remember it and come, like, just speak on it. I think it's so important. Giving from a generous place and giving from a well-resourced place. My invitation is for all of us to notice. Do you notice the difference when you're giving from a not very well-resourced place, when you're giving from depletion, right? When you're giving from fumes? And do you notice how it feels to give from a well-resourced place, from a gracious, generous place? I remember one of the hardest times in my life was when my boys were 3.5 and 1.5. And what I noticed was I'm parenting, I'm giving out of duty and obligation and not out of generosity and love and kindness. And I think, you know, as mothers, you go through different seasons. And that was a season that scared me because I'm like, what is happening here? Nobody sort of told me that this would happen. I wasn't prepared for how not good it felt. And I knew inside it wasn't sustainable. I was like, I don't know how much longer I can do this. And I really had to change up a lot of things in my life and switch into this must be for me a season of giving and receiving. I cannot just be in this season of giving. There's like nothing left to give. Mm-hmm. Right. And I didn't want to continue the path of giving from duty and obligation because I knew it would turn into giving from resentment.
Right. So what did that look like for you? How did you?
At that time, what that looked like was I told my husband at the time, I said, when you come home at 5:15, I just need you. Like, the kids are yours. Like, I'm out. I'm tagging out. I have to just have some time to myself, whether it's to sit in the car by myself on the street or to actually do something. And it wasn't something that was built into my routine yet at that time. Had a pretty high needs older child, and then now you have 2 children under 5, and they just need you, and it's a lot. And I didn't realize fully yet at the time that I was a highly sensitive person, and so very sensitive to noise, sensitive to touch, and like that there's always somebody on me. And I chose to parent that way. I wanted to be able to hold them and carry them. And they were actually, one of them at least, was actually a kid who needed a lot of holding and needed a lot of just more attention, more like being with him than the other. But I was like so depleted. I basically said like, I will run away. Like that's, I knew I wouldn't, but that was the feeling I had of like, if I could, I'd check myself into some psych ward just to have a break. That was the level of desperation at the time. And so my request, and this is also interesting, at that time, I finally realized my request, the intensity of my request and the boldness of my request had to match my level of desperation and need.
Yeah, totally.
Right? I think sometimes we're afraid to ask or afraid to even allow ourselves to think about what our level of need is. And so even if we have the courage to ask for something, it doesn't match the actual level of need. And, yeah. Or it doesn't match the level of seriousness or intensity or urgency that is really present. And so other people go off of what you say and what you show, not your true need if you're not used to showing that. I remember one of our friends was asking us one time to support her with something, and it sounded like a very casual request. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, there's 3 other people in this chat or however many other people in this chat. I've got something going on. Sounds pretty casual, this request. So I'm assuming it's going to get taken care of by someone else. And if it doesn't, it's not a big deal. Until we later found out it was a very big deal and really insignificant or really significant. And it sort of shocked me because the request didn't match the level of seriousness.
Yeah.
And I think that was a good conversation to have with each other. And I definitely know where, you know, if you're used to brushing off what you need, you're worrying about burdening people, then it's easy to either not ask for what you need and just let yourself just get more and more depleted or resentful, or to finally ask, but what you're asking for doesn't actually meet the level of need that you have. And then it just causes frustration for everybody.
Yeah.
Because it's not clear. And if that person does end up giving you that need and it still isn't sufficient, it's very confusing.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's not difficult for us to confuse each other. I love what you spoke to, this level of desperation. I'm going to check myself into a psych ward if something doesn't change. Like, this is such a good way to notice where you're actually at inside. I think we deny ourselves often, especially if we feel that, you know, our needs haven't been met and we're not deserving and all of these uncompassionate things that we do internally. When you notice how bad it is, you know, it's not unusual for people who feel they can't communicate with their partner to fantasize about their death, you know, their partner's death, their own death. That means something needs to change, you know? And if you're just rolling these things around in your head and not articulating them, it doesn't become clear how bad it really is for us. You know, there are plenty of people who think, I just need to check myself into a psych ward to get a break. These are good cues.
That was really scary for me too. And like, upon reflection and hindsight, I see that I didn't know an in-between. Mm. I either knew push through, or you have to feel so bad you feel like you're going to check yourself into a psych ward. Mm. And like, I've never been in a psych ward. I don't want to diminish that experience or how horrifying that experience and scary it can be, and also how supportive it might be at the right time for the right person. But what I knew for me was I didn't know how to ask for help before it got to that level of desperation. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't know that what I needed was much simpler and smaller than the psych ward. Mm-hmm. I wasn't actually at that point, right? I could have been maybe eventually, but I wasn't actually at that point where I needed that. But I also didn't know how to articulate what I needed.
And that's the mental framework, right? We do this organizationally as well with SWOT analyses, where we're looking at potential threats and things that would be nice to have or things that are urgent. And there's an obvious triage system that makes sense in life for when there's something urgent, we're going to address it. But I think we have this baked in thought that the nice to have things can be ignored. But what if we were always operating at that level of things would feel a bit better if, then we'd never get to that urgent place. But when we have this mental framework of black or white and all or nothing, the only potential is I will only receive a break if I'm hospitalized. Yeah.
Right. And even like I remember the mental process. I said, I don't even want to be sick in the hospital, because if I'm sick in the hospital, I'm like, I would still have capacity to feel guilty. I was like, and I was like, I don't even want to feel guilty. I'm like, do I have to get myself to that place of mental, you know, depletion to have a break and not feel guilty as a mom? Right. And that's what my reality was at the time. I didn't know how to take a break without feeling guilty and having all the shoulds and looking at other moms who could do all the stuff. I'm like, well, that's not me right now. And what you said just now made me think of people who ask us, you know, they say, you know, I feel sort of okay right now. I'm like in between relationships. I'm doing all this inner work. I'm really afraid of losing myself again. Or I'm really afraid of being taken advantage of. And my answer to that always seems to be something along the lines of, you don't lose yourself in one interaction in one day. You typically, you know, what people are talking about getting taken advantage of, the type of taking advantage of isn't like someone stealing your money and what overnight. It's like, this is something that happens as a result of a series of moments repeatedly over and over again, where we ignore how we feel and what we need. Mm-hmm. Right. And the culmination of that leads to like 5 years down the road where you're like, I lost myself. Yeah. But if we're willing to practice being present in this moment, noticing how I feel, what I need, articulating that, even if it's, I don't know what I need, but something feels off right now, we need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Then you don't actually get to the point of losing yourself, because somewhere before that time, you're either going to get your needs met or you're going to get out of the situation.
Yeah, definitely.
But it does require the practice of being present and paying attention. And speaking up for what you need.
Yeah, speaking up. I think it's a super common thing for people to feel, you know, irritated by something, but it's like, oh, well, it wasn't really a big deal. And it was just that one time. And then it happens a second time. And you're like, oh, okay, well, it's getting pretty irritated about that. And then the third time, it's like, God damn it. And then we're blowing up, you know? And it's like, well, at no point was there a mention of, hey, it would feel nicer if this or that. Mm-hmm. And the articulating is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was a new mom, one of the things that I learned at that time was if you find yourself yelling at your kids or yelling at people or just generally like irritable and angry, let's not be so hard on yourself over the yelling. Like, look at the yelling as it's like your dash lights come on when you're driving, the oil light or the gas light, just letting you know, hey, there's something to pay attention to, right? Let's be curious about why I lost it on my kid or my partner. And the teaching was, if you're losing it, it means somewhere along the line before that, there was a need that wasn't met, a boundary that wasn't set, that needed to be set earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then I would practice getting curious about when was that? Was that 5 minutes ago? Was that yesterday? Was that 2 weeks ago? And I'd bring myself down the timeline. And then every time I would see it, like, oh, it was then. Or it was like after those three things happened, that was really the time to really start saying something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I didn't. And again, it's not to shame. It's just to bring awareness and to be more intentional the next time around of, oh, I think I need to ask for a break or ask for what I need sooner, right? Share what I need sooner or with more clarity.
That is, in my view, that's compassionate comparison, right? When the mom is saying, oh God, I did the bad thing of yelling. She's comparing herself to some ideal, never yelling parent or some version of herself that is that sometimes. It's more helpful to compare yourself to the iteration of you 3 steps before where things could have been different. And how did you feel in your body at that time? How do you feel now? And as you say, it's just this beautiful noticing to get us to a compassionate place of where we want to be instead of a shaming place of where we think we should be.
Mm-hmm, right? Because one of the questions we wanted to present to you is, how do you use comparison? And what is its impact on you, right? You can use comparison, whether you're comparing with yourself, an ideal, your neighbor, your sister, whoever, your partner, and you can use it as a way to judge yourself and shame yourself and guilt yourself and criticize yourself. And my guess is that's not going to feel very good. It's not going to be super productive to do that. And I also, I'm making the assumption that a lot of us do that, right? And we can also use comparison to notice and let it inspire you. Notice and have it help you see what it is you desire and inspire you to make a small change that moves you in that direction. And I've been so grateful for this practice because my old way of being was compare to judge and shame.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just feel crappy.
Yeah.
And shifting over to this other way of using comparison is notice, let it help me connect to desire, let it help inspire me to make a move in that direction of what I want. That's where your life starts changing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels,
this is the subtle difference, I think, between envy and jealousy. At some point in life, I stopped saying that I was jealous of people, and I started realizing that I envied something. There was something in there that I desired for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just feels so much more empowering to use comparison in that way, right? Of just allowing it to help you see what it is you want and desire.
Mm-hmm. There's also this huge piece of self-discovery and self-acceptance within comparison. This comes up for me actually in these microscopic psychological ways every time you mention snowboarding. When I was a teenager, so at that time skateboarding was very cool and snowboarding was very cool, and it was like a personality and an identity, and it has nothing to do with me. The last thing I want to do is strap anything to my feet and hurdle myself anywhere. Forget it. Feels awful. But at the time, I didn't know that. I just thought, well, I want to be cool. I want to be liked. I want to have pink hair. I must be a skateboarder. I'm not. I must be a snowboarder. I mean, all this resulted was in just deep terror and a chipped tooth, and none of it felt good in my body. But all that I could really feel was, well, that compared to the shame of thinking that I'm not good enough as I am, you know? So it's such a beautiful thing to discover what you actually want to do, you know? And there's still this appeal to me, this part of me that desires to be on a mountain. I mean, I can now see that actually she wants to be in the chalet with hot chocolate. But part of me also wishes I was that way. You know, it would be neat to be a more outdoorsy, adventurous person, maybe. And the truth is that I'm just not that way, you know, and you want to go snowboarding, I want to go to wizarding temple. And that's neat in its own way, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny, your wizarding temple is a place where many of my friends are with you. And I've had moments of, do I want to be in this wizarding temple? And like, wouldn't that be neat to share that experience with my friends? And also, you know, no, I don't think I want to be. And it isn't an outright no, because I'm not interested. I have a curiosity towards it. But if I'm looking at all the potential things I could do with free time, that's nowhere near the top three things.
Yeah.
But it's just neat to notice, oh, like, I'm not part of that. And I think old self would have been, I'm left out.
Right.
I'm left out. My friends have this way they can connect to each other that I'm not a part of. Like, maybe I'll miss out on other parts of the group teachings, you know, if I'm not part of wizardry. I'm like, no, that can just be their thing. I have other things. And speaking of snowboarding, I had such a great time the other day snowboarding. And it completely has to do with things that we've been practicing over the years. One, which is comparing to notice and inspire versus comparing to judge and shame. Like, if I still lived in that place, I would be so anxious and so nervous going down the hill, worried that I was looking stupid and falling down and thinking that I need to be better, and just not enjoying myself. Or anyone I went with, I would feel like, oh my gosh, they're going to see how horrible I am. And that makes me nervous and that adds pressure and I'm not going to enjoy myself. But now it's, I am where I am. If I have to go down the whole mountain on my heel edge, I will do that. And I will have so much fun doing that. And I will enjoy the view and I'll enjoy the fresh air and I'll enjoy how it feels to be like on the mountain. But if I want to be able to string my turns together, I will practice one extra time this time I go down this whatever it's called, this run. Right. And I notice myself, I notice going down the hill, which moments I want to lean in towards some discomfort because I do desire to feel more confident in my turns and like practice my turns. And which moments I'm like, no, you know what? My legs are tired. I'm perfectly fine just going down on my heel edge. And I still have fun, and I have more fun than I've ever had, not being really that much more skilled than I've ever been. Mm. And so that's one thing about comparing to just notice and inspire. The other thing is being able to feel my feet on the ground, feel my body. Like, it's made such a difference in being able to do things like that freak me out a little bit because I feel very rooted in my body. I also feel very clearly when there is capacity to push and when it's not smart to push. And I feel very clearly when I'm starting to feel scared and that I can feel my feet in my boots and I can look at a tree and I can like focus on my exhale and that helps, you know, bring me back down. And I take way more breaks than I ever would have taken before. I would have been like, my legs are killing me, but I don't want to stop and take a break. And people will have to wait for me and that'll be embarrassing. Now I'm just like, I'm probably going to take 10 breaks and I'll either see you at the bottom or I'll see you at the end of the day. Have fun.
Yeah. That's such an important piece for being able to be present with your body. You know, when you go up that mountain and you're so exhausted and, you know, your legs are trembling and you have to dissociate from your body so you can't feel your feet and now you're falling on your face and injuring yourself, you know? Rest, breaks, capacity, all really important.
Yeah. all really important. So, yeah. And I would have never gotten back into snowboarding if I was worried about sucking and comparing myself to others. Even my kid, he was like, "Mom, how is it possible? You've been snowboarding for longer than me. And like, I'm already so much better than you." I'm like, that's just the reality of the situation, bud. I'm okay with it. Are you having fun? Yep. Great. I'm having fun too. We're just different.
Yeah.
Skilled at different things. And yeah. That's all good.
It's huge. And if you were feeling all kinds of shame-based comparison, how might you respond if your kid was like, "You should be better at this. I'm better than you are."
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to say, "Yeah, you are." And that's great.
Mm.
I feel happy for you. You feel happy for you. We're all good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I love
yeah.
that.
What else did I want to chat about around this topic? Oh, yeah. To notice which areas of your life you tend to compare yourself either to other people or to some ideal, right? You might notice, wow, I do it in every area of my life. And it can be comparing like positively and negatively, if you want to call it that, right? What, how does it feel for you to compare and notice, hey, this comes easier to me than to someone else? Like, does that really feel you? And do you live for that? And then are you just as like significantly impacted when you notice it's a different kind of reality where someone else is stronger at you, at something? I used to hate that feeling of somebody is better than me at something. Like, it would just make me not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the kids when they were young, I was like, man, I really hope that I can help instill a different belief system, you know, in them. And I remember being able to say to them, we're all good at different things. Sometimes it's practice. Sometimes it's you're sort of naturally gifted in that way. Sometimes it's a combination of the two, but you will always find something that comes easier to you and something that comes harder to you than somebody else. And that's just the way life is. So they grew up learning that's just a reality of life, and it doesn't have any moral attachments or value judgments on it.
Yeah. There's so much wrapped up in that. I mean, this is making me think of my overfunctioning and overgiving, my inability to make requests in the past, and therefore my feeling that I needed to give all or nothing, and I needed to be the sole provider of everything. So when somebody was better at something than I was, it would be like, oh God, like all this pressure, I need to get better, I need to be better. Now I just am able to let go and celebrate like, oh, great. That's something that I don't need to be responsible for. And it's going to be done better. And everyone will feel good because they're acting according to their abilities and nobody's overextending, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How nice to be able to say that person is so much more skilled at that than me. How great is that? I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can even learn something from them. Maybe, you know, I can be inspired by that.
Yeah.
And a very different way of seeing things than my old way.
So liberating, right? And I think this is also how we live in community, is playing to everybody's strengths. And it's such an abundant place to be instead of this sort of clawing at trying to be the one.
Yeah.
It feels much more spacious to me.
This reminds me of when I work with couples, and one of my main goals with couples is to help them see each of their strengths and how they can play to their strengths, because often they are not aware of their own strengths, but they're aware of how their partner does something in a way they don't like. And they're very good at pointing that out in all the nice and not so nice ways. And we spend time looking at what are each person's strengths? How does that impact you, them, the family? And what might it be like to see that as this is a collective strength you own now together? And when is it helpful to use that strength? And the thing that you're really good at, that your partner is not as good at, most likely they're good at something that you're not so great at. And if you can use each other as teachers to inspire to yourself to either build a little bit of that muscle, or at the very least, just celebrate that collectively you have that skill, mm-hmm. your whole relationship is going to change. And it was really neat to watch relationships change in front of my eyes when people realize that. Mm-hmm. And especially if they have kids, I'm like, how awesome is it that you can let your kids watch you collectively have these strengths? And also through that, get the message that it's okay if they're not good at the same things that you are, or their other parent is, or their siblings are, that each person brings something different to the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. A compassionate, loving, abundant mindset instead of all this shooting and clawing and gripping.
This reminds me of like a question we wanted to present to you is, what did you experience growing up in the area of comparison? Mm. Right? I know that I was compared to cousins, to like family friends, to my brother. I didn't find any of that helpful because it was never... It had this undertone of, you're not good enough. You should be better. If they can do it, why can't you? Mm. And none of that is like helping build your self-worth.
Yeah.
And I really caution parents when I work with them to notice in what way they compare their children with each other and other children, even if you want to call it positively. In front of their kids, in front of other people. And often parents will have this light bulb moment of, oh, I see what other message I'm giving by using that comparison. And you can highlight each person's strengths in a way that doesn't make other people feel crappy about themselves. I think it's important to help highlight everyone's strengths. But there's a way to do it where you're sort of like, underhandedly trying to like motivate another person to do better, that I feel like is not helpful and unnecessary.
Yeah, for sure. I think that can also be subtly introduced when, you know, one of the roles of parents is to provide options, to highlight the fact that there are different ways and means and behaviors and job possibilities and everything that we haven't yet learned as kids, they want to hopefully share with us. And that can feel like a comparison and a set of shoulds as well that can be unhelpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of things to consider. Mm-hmm. Right? And also, when in the parenting realm, are you compassionate with yourself, or do you compare yourself to the ideal parent? The way you should be, right? The way somebody else is, even the way I'm talking. Like, I had to practice a lot. It was also my profession. I got paid to study this. I'm in a different realm when it comes to my starting point, right? So this is not about comparing to someone else. It's just noticing where you are with compassion, noticing how you desire to be as a parent. Who do you want to be as a parent? And where are you at now? And what small shift could move you towards that, right? There's lots of other things that parents do that I'm envious of. And I'm like, oh, that comes so naturally to them. Or that's something they really prioritize in their life. But I don't sit here making myself feel bad for it anymore. I like to see that as, maybe one day I'll feel that that's important enough to make some space for that. And maybe I won't. And that's okay, because there's other things I'm offering to my kids.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at my notes to see if there's anything else.
I wanted to ask the question, what did you witness growing up? Like, say you're watching your parents. Did they outwardly compare themselves to each other, other people, other families?
Mm-hmm. There was sort of a feeling of what will the neighbors think, which I found particularly repellent.
Even at a young age, you felt that?
Yeah. I felt angry about that. It was like, well, what about me? Like, forget what the neighbors think. I wanted to be seen and known and understood, you know? And that felt sort of dismissive and I think even then, without realizing it, I favored authenticity over what will the neighbors think. And yeah, there's comparison definitely to what there's an example that comes to mind. Maybe it was Angela Merkel. Was she the Chancellor of Germany or something?
Okay, I remember my
mom showing me some article about, maybe it was Angela Merkel. And the article was about her husband, who was, I guess, fabulous in some way. And it was really her showing me what the possibilities could be, but sort of framed in like a, well, you could be and should be maybe doing this sort of thing or involved with these sorts of people. And
you should be the Chancellor of Germany one day.
Yeah, something like that.
And if you're not, it means you are a failure and we have failed you as parents.
That's right. I remember my mom saying once when I was a teenager that if I wanted to fly with the eagles, I couldn't hang out with the turkeys. And my interpretation of that at that point in my life was that the eagles were, oh boy, this could be a long story. There was the East Side kids and the West Side kids. The skids and the jocks, we'll categorize them that way. People who had pink hair and people who, you know, went to football games, which are different for me. And in my experience to that point, like elementary school was difficult for me. And that was like the land of eagles. And when I discovered some turkeys, I was like, these turkeys are so nice and like welcoming, like forget those creepy eagles. Like, and that really set me on a course in life that, you know, probably wasn't helpful. Well, in some ways it was helpful and in some ways it wasn't. That was definitely comparison central with a lot of story attached to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So neat. This whole of like this whole idea of finding your people, right? And what judgment you place on that. And I think, I don't know how exactly it is right now for kids. But I remember that time of, are you hanging with the popular kids who are the ones who are the athletes, or are you with the nerdy kids who are the smart kids, or like the smoking kids who don't give a shit? And I think ultimately, and I feel grateful that I had that experience. I was just happy that I found my people. I was like, I can be friends with anybody, but like, these are the people that feel good for me. Because like you could be happily one of the turkeys, or you could be miserably one of the turkeys. You could be one of the turkeys and be so well loved by your fellow turkeys, but if you're always feeling like I should be an eagle and something's wrong with being a turkey, right, there's the comparison right there. You could be so well loved and not getting to enjoy any of it. Right? Or you can just be like, people will gravitate to where they gravitate to. Like, let me enjoy that I have connection here. Right?
Yeah. That reminds me of the movie Elf with Will Ferrell, who's a human-sized person rescued as a baby. Or no, he crawled into Santa's sack and ended up in the North Pole with all the elves. And he was, you know, 18 times larger than all of them. And really, he was loved on very much there, but it didn't feel like his people.
Yeah. That's true too, right? You can be loved on very much, and if that's not your people, it's good to notice what you do with that.
Yeah.
Right.
When I compare the ways I used to think about what were my people, it was these superficial things that you see in movies about teenagers in high school. It's like, there's the jocks, there's the nerds, there's the whatever. It was like, do the clothes feel good and cool? Is the music right? Is, you know, are the activities similar? And all of those things can be important for how your experience feels. But what I notice for myself now, moreover, it's some sort of an emotional, intellectual connection that I desire, which today looks like a feeling of being able to share and prioritize truth and connection and transparency. Like, that's what really feels deeply good for me, is transparency and care and sharing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you got clear on what your deeper need was.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Can we chat a little bit about comparison and seasons of life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes me think of mothers having expectations of themselves.
Yeah, I definitely had lots of expectations. Expectations of myself as a new mom, but also becoming a mother, like, shook my whole world in ways I didn't expect. And it was a hard time for me. And I remember reflecting on it sort of a bit at the time, a little bit, you know, maybe when the kids were a touch older. But what I realized was that how I felt significant in my life was through work and through friends and through hobbies. And all of a sudden, I'm home with a baby who was a high needs baby. And so he was like nursing around the clock all through the night. And that was a personal choice that I made as well, but felt like that's what he needed at the time. And so all the things that brought some life and joy and sense of identity to me were totally gone. Right. My big thing, my love language, I think at the time, one of them was physical touch, or two of them, physical touch and words of affirmation. Words of affirmation that I was used to getting from clients, from colleagues, from work, from connections, physical touch that I had with friends, like hugs and things like that, all gone, totally wiped away. And so in hindsight, it made sense why that time was hard, because all of those things taken away, plus doing something you have no idea what you're doing, and you don't know if you're messing it up, and you're barely sleeping, and all the things. But I remember being in that season of life, and, you know, that was tough. And I was jealous of my husband at the time. He would say, I just went for a client lunch today. And I was like, screw you. Screw you and your client lunch. I don't care where you went. Don't tell me where you went. I don't care what you ate. It was probably some fancy thing. I had a kid on my lap on the toilet. And I was so jealous that he was in a very different season of life, where he got to keep his life pretty much the same. I mean, yeah, he slept also a little bit less. But his sources of, you know, joy, the things that helped him feel connected to the world, were all still there. So I was very envious of that. But I didn't understand it truly at the time. And I didn't understand that it would be a season of life. It felt like imprisonment forever. And you see no change on the horizon. And that then later shifted to, I got back to working part-time. And one of my dear, dear friends who I met there, her kids were older. And she was thriving in life. She got to go to the gym and take care of her body, and was like eating well, and talking about date nights with her husband, and like career wise, just really thriving. Like, she was in it. You could tell that she was like doing what she loved. She was learning. Learning was important to her. She was learning. I think she went back and did her master's. And I remember feeling jealous. And being like, why am I not there? I wish I was doing that. Why don't I get to, you know, study what I want to study and focus on working out again, or focus on my social life? And it was sort of around that time, I don't know how it came to be, but I realized we're just in different seasons of life. Like, it makes no sense to compare where we're at. Like, I'm always going to feel like I got the short end of the stick. Like, I'm like, she went through this already. And probably she helped, because I'm sure she reminded me, I've gone through this. I know where you're at. I get how you feel. It all makes sense. And one day it will be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I hung on to that. And then you know, learn to enjoy the season that I was in and realizing that that season's going to shift too. And then it was really neat because it almost came full circle because another friend of mine who I worked with, her kids were a couple years younger than me. And then we had another friend who had kids a couple years younger than that. And we all saw the same cycle, right? When everyone's kids got to a certain age, you saw this woman emerge again who was like, this is who I am. This is what I enjoy in my hobbies and my career. And like, you're just back to life in a sort of different way, right? Not that you die this awful death becoming a mother. That's not what I'm saying. But there's parts of you can't nurture in the same way because you just have like a limited amount of time and your focus, your priority is on something different. And your kids have more needs when they're younger, generally speaking. And but one by one, you saw each of us emerge in this way. And it was such a good reminder, different seasons of life. And it was almost like we passed the torch down. It was like, you know, my first friend, she was ahead of me and she sort of passed the torch down. And it's like, now it's your turn to emerge. And then I passed it down to the next friend whose kids were getting older. Now it's your turn. I would see her, you know, really looking at where do I want to take my career next? What's the learning that excites me? Who am I really? Right. And then slowly we saw our last friend in that group get to that place. And we were so excited because we knew she had wanted this too. She's like looking ahead and seeing us and being like, oh my gosh, I wish I was at that place. I wish I had that life. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm still trudging along with really young kids who really need me. And I have to put those other things on the back burner for now. But sure enough, Everyone walked through that season of life eventually. And so that was a really good lesson for me. And I definitely keep that lesson tucked away of like, don't forget what season of life you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't forget what's possible for the future. You know, I think this is something for me that's been really prominent is comparing love lives. You know, and most of my friends right now are in love. And before, I would have just been jealous about it and resentful. And now I really feel celebratory of the fact that such love exists. You know, I can imagine as a mom, you might have looked enviously towards this potential future and regret not having it now. And I think you'd also be able to celebrate that that potentiality exists and that you might enjoy it one day.
Yeah. I mean, learning to enjoy what's present is something I really had to practice because even growing up, I was conditioned to always be striving for the next thing. I didn't even celebrate when I got to that next thing. It was before, like when I was on the brink sort of, and it was pretty clear I was going to achieve that next thing, already in my mind was what's the thing after that that I'm going to work towards, right? So there was no such thing as enjoying where I was, trusting that a new season would emerge eventually. And I really, really had to learn that to enjoy what's here. I remember someone once saying, what you are not appreciating right now is the end of the marathon line for somebody else. Like they are just wishing that they could be you in that, you know, in that area of their life. I was like, oh, that's a really good perspective. Like, it's all relative, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just enjoy this part. Yesterday, I was at an appointment, and the lady said, oh, how are you? How's life going? I said, yeah, good. You know, kids are good. Kids are healthy, busy. We're doing our thing. And she's older. She has 4 grandkids. She says, enjoy them. Because one day, they're going to be so busy, they don't want to spend time with you. And those are such great reminders. It's easy to forget. I mean, luckily, I feel pretty connected to that knowing. So I'm doing my best to really enjoy these moments. I know the next probably 2 to 5 years will be very different with my kids. But I think there was a part of their childhood I didn't enjoy as much as I could have because I was wishing it away, waiting for the next thing, hoping. Yeah. it would be better, easier, whatever.
Yeah. There is no joy in wishing things were different. The flip side of wishing things were different is realizing there's something you desire, which gives you something to orient to and feels good and brings compassion to what might be a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful thing to be in this context, what you described with your ex-husband, and recognizing that he's in a different position. He's in a different season of life. You could spend all that time railing against the reality of what's happening for you, or you can recognize that you're in a moment. You're in the middle of a journey that's taking you somewhere that will change, and to find some peace with that in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had this moment with a good friend of mine, maybe 2 years back. We were sitting in her, just in her, like by the front door. I was supposed to be picking up the kids from play date, but those usually turn into like a long chat. And I think I said something like, you know what? I think it's really important that we enjoy and are really present for the, especially for the next couple years, because I realized our kids were maybe, I don't know if they were 8 and 10, 9 and 11 at the time. I said, we're at this place where our kids still really want to hang out with us. They enjoy us, right? They are choosing us, generally speaking, over hanging out with their friends. So that's going to change eventually, just because developmental changes and life and growth and things. I said, also, we're in pretty decent physical health, and our parents are still pretty okay. That is all going to change. Like, none of that is going to, where none of us are like going 10 years backwards and getting that much younger and that much healthier. Like, it's all moving towards, there's going to be more ailments, more loss, more separation and individuation with our kids, which is natural and healthy. And like, not to just be a total downer, but that's the reality of what is to come. And I remember thinking, like, what a special time this is now, where we're not worrying about any of those things. Those are not, we're lucky enough to not have any ailments right now. Our parents are okay. This isn't like a time that, a season that won't last forever, you know, because it's going to change. And so that was really special to be able to catch it during
and enjoy
and realize that and enjoy.
Yeah, totally. I remember at some point I realized, actually, when I started tracking my cycle, and it sounds silly to say, but it made me realize that everything is a cycle, you know, and obviously seasons we know are cyclical. That's probably the most obvious one for us. But I realized, I don't know if I've ever paid attention to when the trees blossom in the spring. And so I made sure to do that. I realized, oh God, there comes a day where you've seen your last bloom. And I'm like, I want to pay attention to that, you know? Enjoy. Yeah, enjoy what you can.
Yeah. So many. And it doesn't mean like pretend the hard things aren't there. It doesn't mean like to ignore your deeper desires if you desire something different one day, or, you know, but it just means, can you hold both? Can you enjoy what's present and be connected to desire? And also, I might have said this in our other episode, but can I hold excitement for the future and also honor timing and pacing?
Yeah.
That's going to be a season that comes for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The season of me talking today has come to an end. I cannot speak anymore.
Well, we are all about honoring the season, so.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about this before we close?
I thought that was just very cute and very clear. Of you articulating where you're at, it sort of brings us back full circle of like, be clear about where you're at, and then we can work with that. Imagine if you were like, the season of talking is over, but I don't dare say it, so let's just keep going.
Yeah,
that's no fun,
right? With my capacity dwindling, and then what happens? No bueno. Yeah, good. Thank you. No. Okay, so that's it. Nothing else you want to say?
Nothing else I want to say.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you guys for being here. Mm-hmm. As always, please like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody that you care about.
And we didn't do our closing practice or a closing
practice. Oh, doy. Doy.
So I'm making one up, which is just wiggle your nose. And see if you can wiggle your nose without laughing. Or if laughter just wants to come. It's very hard.
You can't even start to not laugh. Okay, serious.
Wiggle it.
Oh, it's hard to not be silly when you're wiggling your nose.
But does your whole, like, can you wiggle your nose without wiggling your mouth? No, I can't.
Okay, I want to try really hard.
I'm crossing, like, my eyes do funny things, but I try to do that. No. Okay, the answer is no. It all wiggles together.
Yeah. Unit.
So, this is just to remind you that body connection can come in all different forms. And if you need to shift out of a grumpy state, try this one.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Keep practicing and report back.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you. Okay. See you next time.
Bye.